Well, I think we have a little time before lunch, and so if the finance committee wants to proceed with some of the items before we set them on the executive committee, that would be.
I'll then turn it over to the finance committee.
First order of business of the finance committee is the approval of the previous minutes, which have already been stated. Is there any motion for approval?
Go ahead.
Mr. Martin, second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Committee item number one will be the update on the Department of Progress and Information, the Land and Water Resources Conservation Administration.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick comment to the commission. There's one strategic plan in, so begins another one. After the first of the year, we should be getting our instructions from the Legislative Budget Board with respect to the preparation of the natural agenda, which is the strategic plan that the legislature looks at to track and monitor our progress with respect to implementing key deliverables. Expect those instructions to come out, I presume, in February. Back there for a head nod of affirmation. Sometime after the first of the year, we will be getting those instructions, and we'll begin working on that, and obviously we'll keep you apprised of it. One of the important parts of having these two strategic plans for the agency is making sure that we crosswalk appropriately between those plans so that we can So that's a key element that we're going to be looking at as we go to work on the natural agenda for the legislature. That plan, I think, as most of you know, also kind of sets the stage for the issues that we want to discuss with the legislature and the oversight bodies with respect to our legislative appropriations request for the committee. So we look forward to working on that and coming back and reporting to you all on the development of that. But Chairman, that's all I'm coming out.
Thank you. Any questions? Committee item number two is the internal audit reports, recently concluded and ongoing internal activities reports, and approval of the FY10 audit funds for bachelor bills.
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, Commission members. For the record, my name is Scott Rosenzetta, and I'm the Director of Internal Audit. Well, last time we provided an update was in May, so I wanted to update you on the activities of our office through the end of fiscal year 2009. We completed 8 rounds of state park audits in fiscal year 2009. The last two, round 7, we had 9 of the 10 parks that we mentioned were compliant. The testing period was approximately 17 months after the criteria that we audited against was developed and provided to the park. One of the good things about the, and actually this extends to rounds 5, from rounds 5 through 8 of 2009, is that most of the parks that we had that were compliant did not have any problems with the revenue processes. And all of the parks that we visited were free of any material errors in their visitation, recording errors in their visitation function and recording process. For round 8, we went to 11 parks, and again, it's the same story. We had 10 of the 11 of them that were compliant with basic procedures. The testing period for this was in May, which is 19 months after the criteria was developed. And again, we had 10 of the 11 parks that did control that there was a revenue and collection and restoring process. And all of the parks were free of any reporting errors for visitation, collection, and reporting. Now, when we started doing the state park audits in October of 2007 under the direction of the state auditor recommendations in report was 7021. Now, through the end of FY09, for the parts that we had done our risk assessment for the 8 months, we had 79 of those, or 98%, that were compliant at least once in the process from October of 2007 through 8/31. And you can see the high risk parts, all relatively less, and high risk is defined as having high revenues and high reputation. The state parks has improved substantially from the previous year as far as the compliance with the audits. Now, the rest of the 2009 audit plan, we had a key performance measure review, and this was issued in September. Now, this audit that we did examined the department's reporting of FY 2008 key performance measures, which there were 20 of them, and the reporting to the LBB. And what we did for this audit is we took the methodology that the FAO used to conduct these audits, and we changed some aspects of it so that we could use it here within the agency. And using that same methodology, our results were that of the 20 key measures that we looked at, 11 would be certified, 2 would be certified with qualifications, so that gives us a 65% of the measures that we looked at, 13 out of the 20, would have been certified, and which means that what was reported would have been within a variance of plus or minus 5%, given our testing. But we did have 35% of them, 6 of them that were inaccurate, and 1 that we weren't able to certify for various factors. When we went in and looked at the 11 specific measures that the department had stated that we had met the goals, after our review, we saw that 7 of those 11 had actually met their goals. 2 of the measures were reported by the divisions as being met, but they had numerous data errors and that prevented the measures from meeting those targets. And the remaining two measures, we couldn't determine whether they could meet the target because of the types of errors and the errors that cause difficulties and have an effect on our calculations to try to get to those numbers. Now, what we did with this audit was to write the report and elevate it to the level of the DEDs. Because of the types of errors that were out there, some were recording, some were approval, some were a number of different types of errors occurred. So what we did is we wrote our recommendation to say that we needed to take a look at correcting the weaknesses in the input process and review controls. And what we've done is internal audit is working with each of the divisions. We're providing the information that we found the results of the audit to the divisions to present to go ahead and develop their own corrective action plans and take the steps necessary to correct the process. I'll give you an example. We worked with the wildlife division, one of the first divisions. They had 3 key measures, one of which was accurate or certified, and the other 2 were inaccurate. Once we got the concurrence of management, and specifically Clay Brewer and Clayton Lowe, once we received their concurrence as to what we found, they were very proactive in addressing those issues and directing their staff to take the necessary action. And actually, we found most of the divisions were concurred with our results and have taken some sort of corrective action. We're also working with Julie Horsley and Administrative Resources because she is a conduit for the reporting of these to the LBB.
Carlos, would you give the commission an example of what one of those performance measures might be in the Wildlife Division? I think it probably helped them understand what that survey is.
Yeah, one of the ones that comes to mind is the number of surveys that we completed. When we went out there and took a look at that, there were surveys that were counted as each flight or each story, I believe, and Slay can probably elaborate on this a little better. But then there were also others, the Playa Lakes, and I believe some of the smaller ones where they didn't count the number of stories, they just counted that they did a survey. So it could have been a number of flights that they did to accomplish that one survey. So there were some of the performance measures that we found was we weren't giving ourselves enough credit for that. And then on the flip side, since it is a manual process out in the counted more than one mistake. So when our recommendation was to examine the entire process from the collection of them to the review and finally to kind of put them here and the final approval and for them to send them on to the LBB. The second audit that we did was an asset management audit, again issued in September of 2009. And some of the results of that was that asset reconciliation processes and entry preparation and approval needed improvement. The accountability for capitalized and controlled assets, that needed improvement. And the accounting related to purchase donated and disposed assets. And management has taken some action on that already. The AR division now archives the reconciliations between IFS, which is our internal system, and SPA, which is a statewide property accounting database that is held by the controller. And they do the reconciliations that they store now on our end drive, and they have all the reconciling items and positions that are noted. Again, the AR division sent out inquiries to various divisions to clear issues related to accounting for capitalized and controlled assets. And what we found when we went out there was that the proper custodian was not named for that asset. The serial number may have been wrong. There were a number of problems in that matter. And AR took the lead in going out and trying to get answers for a lot of those assets that were questionable. And finally, procedures are either in place and we're suggesting that they be followed or they're being developed for proper accounting treatment of purchased, donated, and disposed assets. And for purchased assets, I know that the BIS system is gonna be instrumental in safeguarding a lot of those assets and reporting that information. AR is currently developing procedures for donated assets to ensure that anything that comes through the donations that are regularly accepted in the department should be reported correctly.
Before you go on, what is the issue with purchase?
We had a number of problems there. We had a number of assets that we were able to obtain the documentation for the purchase of it, but then on the back end we could not find the assets, and we couldn't find either asset tags or custodians, any of the paperwork.
You couldn't find the records on the back end.
Get it?
Yeah.
And we don't know whether those assets were drop shipped to other areas of the state.
Saying the procedures in your view are now in place for process building
development. The procedures are out there for us. The problem is being decentralized is getting everybody to follow those procedures and to do the documentation, provide the supporting documentation on time. A lot of that happens since some of our operational units, just an administrative task, it's maybe slides towards back in their list, and sometimes it's overlaid. I think a lot of it is that human error, the human nature.
I think it has to do, Commissioner, going to your question, it's a management issue for us in terms of making sure that our teams out in the field are compliant with the procedures and processes that are already in place. So, if we get a shipment of multiple lawnmowers, for instance, to one park and then distributed to multiple parks just for, ease of transportation, we need to make sure at that juncture that we have taken the serial number, we have reported that, we have clearly delineated what park that lawnmower will be assigned to, and who will have responsibility for it. In some cases, we've been inconsistent, I guess, in terms of making sure it's being done, because maybe there wasn't clarity about whose responsibility that was. So it's incumbent upon management working with our teams to make sure that happens in the future.
Any other questions? current audit assignment, we have the ongoing park audits that we started here at starting 9-1. We're about to kick off on next Monday our fifth round of park audits for FY 2010. We're doing a concession program follow-up, and that entails following up on the recommendations we provided from an internal audit that we did in 2002, from the 07021 audit that the SAO did, and from the lease concession audit that we did from here in FY. We're going back and looking to see whether the concession program is followed up on any of those recommendations. We do have an active audit project. We're looking at the accounts payable function, and that's already been started. We have one advisory assignment, and that is the business continuity plan revision. I'm working with Steve Schroeder of the infrastructure division and representatives from each of the divisions in order to update this. And as part of the request, we also wanted to add information in there for contact, especially contact information in case that there be a problem with the H1N1 flu upcoming. So I guess a redundancy in the contact that we need for decisions. Now, tomorrow, our office is going to be seeking the approval of the FY 2010 audit plan. And the audit plan requires commission approval for the Texas Government Code Chapter 2102, which is an internal auditing act. How did we get there? Our office performed an agency-wide risk assessment. We identified what we call auditable units. It could be programs, processes, systems that we can take a look at. We did some information gathering. We had surveys and interviews with management at all levels of select staff. And our project is going to be program operational type audits and IT projects. Some other administrative items that we have completed with the distribution of our internal audit report. I sent that out last week. You all should have a copy. At the commission retreat, I was able to get the sign-off on the audit charter revision. And basically, there was some really significant things that we changed in there. But I think the biggest thing was to identify Commissioner Falcone as being our new finance committee chairman. Finally, as a result of the 81st legislature, there was a request in there that for reporting and stimulus fund reporting requirements, that each agency have a link to the SAO site for fraud, waste, and abuse that includes their hotline number and includes a link to their reporting, the fraud, waste, and abuse report form, and a number of ways to get in contact with them, either by mail, or by phone, or by email. And we've completed that, and that's on our public website. That concludes my presentation for the questions. Oh, sorry.
In your audit report back in April, you reported about the sand and gravel, rather sand and gravel, not the property.
I'm not sure as far as if they're back in compliance.
You know, it's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but we can certainly find that out today for you. You know, we went through a process to come up with an agreed upon payment plan to rectify for the arrears that they were owed to us. I don't know the status of that. We had a trigger there that if they were past due, we would be notified of that immediately. So I'm assuming they're in compliance, but let me just check on that.
They hadn't properly calculated for paying.
Let us check on the status of that. We'll get back to you.
Carlos, well, I want to thank you for the work you've been doing here and tightening up our audit group. I think you did well. Remember, when you came aboard, we just hired a whole lot of auditors, so we had a lot of new people. On the parks audits, that's starting to settle out and smoothing out, and people understanding in the field what needs to be done, how to do it, and what's the most efficient way to do it?
Yes, sir, in my estimation, it is. The other thing is that we moved away from that. What we're going to do now is we talked to Scott and to Walt, and what we agreed on is to do half the parts. So each part gets wanted every other year.
Okay.
So we did expand from 81 parts to 86. We did add some facilities where Walt specifically wanted us to go. Parts that hadn't been taken to look at.
So you're fairly comfortable with the way the program is now operating. Let's just start back from that point of view.
Yes, sir. And I believe it's actually turned into somewhat of a competition for parts today. They all want
good.
To find. So I think that little intangible probably showcase when it takes our day.
Yeah, it does internally, and just also lets you know, of course, it's like legislature. I mean, you know, credibility has risen fairly dramatically relative to the previous legislature. This has been a big part of it. So Walt's in here calling thank you to the parks group. And with you coming aboard, and of course the new auditor someday, and Gene's been a big part of that too. So it made a lot of difference. It was the right thing to do. We needed to do it. It's been done well. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for your support.
When you say you're going to audit a park every other year, will it audit be for a 2-year period or just for the year previously?
What we'll probably do is set out a time where the records are probably, where the records are consistent. There's no holidays, any kind of exceptions. Like I know what's going on, and do an audit on that time. We'll do what we'd like to take for that, or say it's like 2-week period at the end of September. We don't cover the operations.
A snapshot. That's what. But as part of all this change in the parks and with all the new systems we put in place, our internal financial controls are dramatically improved. So they're much more consistent across the board. And I mean, to the point where, if I remember 4 or 5 years ago, there were 10 or 12 different types of counters for the cars, the way they came. I mean, just to give you an example, everything was inconsistent. So that has really been tightened up dramatically, which I assume that would make your audits look much better, and hope that snapshots are clean snapshots.
And that's where we come in with that. We couldn't find any errors in the last 4 rounds that we did in 09 for the visitation.
That was a big problem we had, where a lot of our credibility was lacking. Go ahead, Carlson. Sorry, Chairman, but I appreciate what you've done.
Thank you. Any other questions? I will then place the section of this item regarding approval of the FY10 audit plan on the first commission agenda for public comment and action. Committee item number 3, conservation license plate marking update.
Bob Temple, Chairman of Commission. Pleasure to be with you today. I'm marching directly for Central Park and Wildlife. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you this morning and share with you a little bit about our successes in the 2009 marketing conservation action plan and some of our preliminary plans for this year. So thanks for making time to have a little bit of the first thing I want to mention, and I know we have to be this program benefits a wide range of divisions and programs in our agency. Since we launched the first phase 10 years ago, we generated more than $3.8 million for various programs here in the agency. There are 4 plates that we see here. There's the corn lizard plate, the honeytail plate, as we call it, that we introduced 10 years ago, and that's our very first plate produced in 1999. And it benefits wildlife and industry. There are a lot of other funds we have available, which is a very important place to use the program to fall into wildlife services. It's generated $2,360,489 for the program over those 10 years, and still ranks as the number 3 place in the state of Texas. It's a very popular place. And that's not just amongst the CDU, among State Parks Place was introduced a few years later, 2001. It's Benefit State Park. We chose the blue bonnet image because it was very hard to pick one image from the State Parks. We thought that would be a popular image, and it has proved to be so. And that is ranked as number 7 place in the state of Texas, very popular as well. And we have generated to date $758,640 in gross revenue from that place. In 2002, we introduced the deer and the bat plate. The deer plate supports wildlife, big game, and big game program hunting. It's generated more than $409,000 for those efforts programs. And the bat plate was introduced also that year, and it benefits various fisheries programs and has grossed more than $274,000. We also, I just might take a moment to mention, we also support the blue plate, both the existing duck plate and the new blue heron plate in our brochures and our website. So we also support those plates. So the parts of wildlife plate is most important that you see here. We feel this program actually represents, we think, a very unique revenue generating product. And there are a couple reasons for that. The first is there's no cost to our department to produce that product. It's produced by TxDOT. It's sold by TxDOT. Fulfilled by TxDOT. And we receive $22 for each year every plate sold. So that's a very high return on investment potential because of that fact. In addition, this is probably the only product we talk about in terms of lifetime value. This plate has been for 7 years. After that, it has to be replaced because of the reflectivity guidelines that TxDOT maintains. So for 7 years, most of our customers keep their plate. And part of that is even increased in recent years because TxDOT actually sends out your registration bill. So if you have a specialty plate, you know this. And included in that is your renewal for the specialty plate. So there's a great disincentive to not renew your plate. You have to actually go bring your plate into the office, and pick up a new plate. So we've estimated that probably about 3% of our customers still have the plate after 7 years. So that means that we have a pretty high lifetime customer value. We estimate about $95, and that's based on assuming that after the first year, 20% of the customers will purchase that plate, and in year one, not renew it. And every year after, about 10%. And that's an estimate. TxDOT's not able to provide us with any details on that. So it's an estimate. TxDOT is the one that has told us that they believe that these are fairly accurate in terms of just an estimate. And so that also adds to the pages of this product. In addition, as you can appreciate, the plate can be billboard every time you see a Hornblower plate or a Blue Water plate or a Hunt Texas plate or a Fish Texas plate. It helps kind of promote the wildlife and condition of the department. So to talk a little bit about our marketing last year, before I get into kind of what dollars we spent and how this broke out, I just want to mention for a little bit of background is we actually did not market the plate in FY09, 05, excuse me, through most of FY08. And that was driven by the fact that the legislature did not renew our appropriation authority for the plate. So during that time, it went pretty dark. We did keep our brochures out. We had some support from the government, which allowed us to keep our brochures out, but we basically did not market the plate. And during that time, we did see a reversal in our sales growth, which we were very concerned about. And we had about a 14% drop in that period, so we were very excited when we were able to start marketing the plate again when the appropriation authority was renewed. We indicated, I should say, to the 80th legislature. So that at that point, we began marketing the plate. And while we no longer had a full-time FTE as we originally had when we launched the program, we're lucky to have a very dedicated marketing coordinator, Carly Dries, who's on my staff. And she will be here presenting to you, but she's now is with other states working on fish and wildlife sales for the Transitional Learning Fishing Foundation. So we're very lucky that even though we have two dedicated persons, we had quite a bit of sound support to keep this sales going. So just looking at what we did this past year, we invested $50,440, and that was made up of 10% of the sales the year prior from the horn lizards and the demonic plague. You can see the figures there, the dollars there, and then we had a slightly larger percent of the smaller sales, 15% in a year of that. And so combined, marketing was over 50,000. And we were finally able to get a marketing site in April. It took a while to get, you know, everything organized, meet with all the beneficiary division, and kind of get a plan underway. But we began marketing in April. And that investment did result in a very impressive ROI. In year one, we had a 63% ROI. And I have here a lifetime ROI with a question mark, because as I spoke with you about a minute ago, it's really hard for us. We do not know exactly what the ROI is, but whatever dollars we spend to acquire that new customer, that same customer, we don't have to spend money to renew them. Tax on the basis of having on rentals, those dollars keep coming in for multiple years. So it's an ROI beyond what we can actually project or estimate accurately. The program, in terms of actual dollars in FY09, rose to $536,002, and that was an 18.9% overall increase, and all the plates were up at least 15%. Dollars were created to $82,116, and it resulted in 3,732 new plates on the road. And just to give you a little idea about how we got those results, we did quite a few good things in our mind. And for one thing, we did a lot more online advertising. About half of our budget was spent online advertising. Part of that is the fact that TechSite and recently, the last few years, made it possible for customers to buy their plate online, to make those online purchases, which is, we wanted to take advantage of that. And also, I mean, as we all know, the internet usage just continues to grow dramatically across all demographic groups, and we wanted to take advantage of that. So we have here, you see the banners, what we call banner ads, and they expand and open up to show a drive view. And that appeared because in Texas, geotargeted Texas residents, and our media buying agency basically created an online sharing ad that reached people who were drivers and people going out to recreation. We had more than 2 million impressions, 18,231 clicks, and we had a click-through rate of 0.81%, which is above the industry average of 0.20%. So we exceeded industry average there. We also really did well in Google AdWords, and you can just see there below there, I should just a little frame from the Google Ads. We also carried the very top three mentions there, you see from the top. And basically, with the Google AdWords, we also received a high number of impressions. We were seeing our Google ad, 187,000 impressions, 4,667 clicks. Click-through rate of 2.74%, and again, that was above an industry average of 0.50, so significantly above industry average. So just, you know, we're having some really successful results online, and very excited about that. I just thought I'd show you a frame from our website that we redesigned in 2008. We wanted to make it more sales-oriented, nice and clean, appealing-looking. And if any of you have not had a chance to visit the website, you'll see, you'll find it also offers a lot of detailed information on where the dollars are going. So if you go into the more lizard plate, you'll be able to look at the projects that are funded with those dollars. We do believe that a lot of our customers think that's important, and it's sort of another marquee to market. So we do a lot of work on that. In addition, we do a lot of email marketing, and that's very cost effective for us because we use our TWD email subscription service, and we have at this time 97,000 subscribers and growing. And so we're able to market to those, you know, to these people at no cost. We did six different versions. We did a horn lizard and blue bonnet. We did a beer and fast. We did them individually depending on the seasonality. We targeted those messages, sent out more than 62,000 emails, and we had over 1,000 clicks. So that was also very successful for us. That's also above, I might mention, industry average is about 1.32% clear sighting on glass, and then she's about 1.68%, which, again, is an industry average, and I continue to use that email marketing. In addition, we did some direct mail tests. We sent out 12,000 letters to the Texas National Conservancy members, that was to promote our corn litter plate for the Walnut Diversity Program. We sent 10,000 letters to hunting license holders, sustainable mountain fish license holders, and sustainable mountain state park pass holders. So these were different groups we targeted with each of the various plates to, along with the brochure, to try to get them to purchase a plate supporting those programs. We also did print ads. We did fewer print ads. Obviously, our online dollars increased, so something had to decrease, and we decreased some of our spending on print. We still ran at the highway wildfire issue, which was running the blue bonnet plate, which was a very good issue for that to reach that audience with the blue bonnet plate. The personal life magazine, obviously, our own magazines had their money. So they were locked on from off our center insert and some other internal newsletters, which are of cost. And we continue to distribute our brochures, print more brochures to distribute to state parks, law enforcement officers, as well as to other dealerships. And we worked pretty aggressively with the NGOs and other entities so we can try to leverage our marketing. Part of the 2009 plan was also the redesign of the deer plate. We're pretty excited about this. We've been talking about it for a long time, and both wildlife and marketing shared the belief that we probably just didn't have quite the best image for our deer plate.
For a very minimal redesign, treating out things that usually we were able to redesign that. We're close to the ball line on that. And as you can see, that image there is a pretty macho deer. And more so, that photo was actually, it's kind of nice to know that that photo is based, that image, excuse me, is based on a photo of an actual trophy deer.
You know what it scored?
Somebody probably does. Not me. We can find that out for you. Anyway, we did launch this in May 15, and whenever you do a redesign or a relaunch, you always have the opportunity, and I'm sure most of you know, to gain their a little PR spin. So we had a lot of fun working with our news and info folks. Tom Harvey in particular always works well with us and folks with us on this, and we had a lot of fun with this headline, new artwork takes your license plate from Pink Camacho. So just gave us an opportunity to try to get that out, try to get some free coverage, and of course we promote our website for all the plates. So, it seems to be doing very well, and hopefully Mr. Bennett will purchase the plate. Looking ahead for this year, which we're already into, we're going to continue to market the plate. So we recently completed a meeting with the beneficiary divisions, as we call them, which is wildlife, state parks, and inland fisheries. And we have received their support to continue marketing the plate. A little bit less money than we had this last year. We're in tight budget times, but we are very excited to be able to continue this program, this marketing this program. And we're looking at increasing sales by 5% and hopefully launch a little earlier this year in January as opposed to April, which we kind of launched last year. So again, briefly, we're in the midst right now making our plan, so this is preliminary, but we expect even more to say, with more online marketing, more email marketing, some print. And we're going to be doing some research and testing also. While we can't get the kind of data we wish we could get from TxDOT in terms of the people that purchase our plates, we are able to get zip code information. So we're going to look at where have our plates been doing well with zip codes in Texas and start doing direct mail that targets those zip codes. In other words, hunting license holders in those zip codes so that we can be hopefully more effective. And as well as looking at the county tax offices in those areas, because we yeah, that's based on the need. If people have zip code like our place, probably other people have zip code like that place, sort of the general zip code marketing, you know, approach to things. And we also are going to take advantage of doing some email survey on our website. There is our website. We're going to be, you know, finding out if they're interested in the place, why, if they're not, why, and some of our messaging. So we'll continue to test and, as always, refine and tweak our marketing efforts. And that concludes my presentation. As always, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Very good.
You said one of your slides.
Do you want me to go back?
Just.
Yeah. The email.
Who are the 97,000 subscribers?
Well, those are people that sign up on our website to receive our email class. They can sign up for one or all of the various items. They include hunters, anglers, people who sign up for hunting information, fishing information, state park information, conservation information, and so forth.
Okay, well, you said that one of the things you want to do next year is to increase direct mail to, for example, hunting licenses.
Well, we want to test it. I'm not sure we're going to increase. We'll probably spend less next year. We want to test it a little bit more.
What's the cost of sending one direct mail to a license holder?
Well, again, depending on how many we send out, it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of like 33 cents or so bulk that we send out with a number of other. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We'll be on the top.
So I still say I'm all set. We need to work on whatever we need to do to get email addresses from our license holders so that we can make it easier for them to do business with us.
And I could not agree more. We have begun to do. In fact, in all of our big contracts and funds mailings, we now request and try to ask them to give their email address because we've explained them what they're money and we've had the work with the licensing firm so that on the licensing purchase, actually now is the default that the email address is based on. And we have to uncheck the email address because we're really working hard with integrating all of you that this is the most cost-effective thing that we can do. We also have we're beginning to meet with the other divisions to send out emails to manage and marketing groups. Obviously, other people in the division send out issue news reports, et cetera. And we're working with them on a plan right now to better coordinate and plan our email marketing efforts. And we continue to ask all the divisions to try to do what they can do to support it. In fact, we recently spoke with state parks, and we are in the process of getting all of the camping, overnight camping reservations, the people that have provided their email address, imported into our delivery, which is our email subscription service, so that we can send them an invitation to sign up. It still has to be permission-based, but we can send them that one invitation, and that may be somewhere in the neighborhood 200,000 people that we'll be sending. So we are. I just want you to know that I've worked for you that we were saying, and we are working as hard as we can to make that happen.
Great.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Being a relatively new commissioner, may have come up for me. Is there any place to create a new place? I mean, I guess the last place in 2002. And what really looks like a mission to me is the coastal fishermen. There's a big contingent of fishermen throughout their coastal communities throughout Texas, and there's not a place.
Well, that's a very good question, and we always do have discussions. But in coastal fisheries, one of the issues that came up there is that there is the CCA place. And that's a very popular place for the Coastal Conservation Association, and a lot of the coastal anglers, that's their place. And so that and those funds are often used to support efforts that, you know, are consistent with the park mission. So that has been frankly a concern, is that there is a play out there with the message that supports coastal fishing. It's just been hard to determine where we should go in and try to compete with that play. There is a deposit required to launch a play for $2,000. And so there's also a question of are there funds available to invest in that, and are we going to get a return, you know, on that play? So that's something that we can certainly, in fact, we're meeting, I think, maybe next week again with Coastal Fisheries just to talk about general marketing priorities and we can certainly ask about that again.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
One other question. As far as your marketing, has there been any push market directly a lifetime fishing license, hunting fishing license holder?
You know, I don't know if there has.
We kind of have a captive market there. Anybody that's gone to the expense to buy that license.
That's a very good,
very good market.
That's an excellent idea. I don't think we've done that yet. And you know, especially now that we've had this increase in the number of lines up. It used to be that was a fairly small number when we marketed to them with our big time hunt efforts. But that's something we'll look into. It's a really good idea. I appreciate that.
Any other questions? Comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We will now move to committee item number four that will be heard in executive session. Personal matters, performance evaluation of expenses plus online department and safety.
There's no action required.
I would like to announce that pursuant to the requirements of chapter 551 code referred to as the Open Meetings Act, an executive session will be held at this time for the purpose of the following: consultation with attorney, 551.071, deliberation regarding real estate, 551.072, deliberation regarding a prospective gift, 551.073, and deliberation regarding personnel, 551.074. And we will now recess the executive session.
Do you want me to hand you that?
That's fine. That was excellent.
The one thing I do pretty well.
Let's go ahead and reconvene the Finance Committee. There is no further action needed to be taken on item number four. So the work of the Finance Committee is complete.